the narrative.
Everybody, welcome to Forge Narrative. My name is Paul Murphy, your host. We are the Bell of Lost Souls podcast. I'm joined today by Adam Abramowitz and Chris Morgan.
I'm Justin Shrew.
I could be on WoW, but I love you instead.
And Andrew Whitaker.
Super glad I don't play WoW.
Not trying to alienate anybody. People can play what they want. Play all kind of games around here.
Like 40K.
I got models to paint.
It's a never-ending cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
I was messing around with some resin this week, putting tentacles onto some AdMech stuff. Some Forge World AdMech stuff.
I thought at one point, and maybe I'm making this up, but I thought Paul Murphy said that he was a non-conversion guy, that you don't do conversions.
I do mostly kit bashes. That's kind of my thing. I do kit bashes for things because I don't, like, I can't sculpt. I can't.
Okay, no third-party models. So then what?
No, I don't mind third-party models. I mean,
a kit bash, in my opinion, a kit bash counts as a conversion. Like, you don't need to have green stuff into your own model.
I didn't
think there was a distinction between the two.
I'm a hobby snob sometimes, too. I think I don't want to take anything away from the people that do full-on conversions. As opposed to my humble kibashing.
Okay.
But I'll take it. Anyway, where I was going with this is the tentacles, I know some people shape them and stuff before they put them on. I used a heat gun after I already affixed them. And the first one was terrifying to do because you're turning a heat gun on a model.
On resin? On Forge World resin?
You could always turn it on back again and bend it back.
Well,
assuming the whole thing didn't, turn into a gloopy pool.
Yeah, maybe some people could. I don't know if I could. But it was way faster and I think way easier dealing with that way. And it was, you just put the heat gun, kind of just did it on the low setting, got a little bit bendy, put it in place, and then just use you could just use the air temperature, your breath to cool it back down to where it's rigid again. They went from looking like freakishly, like, I don't know, really kind of goofy looking with the tentacles all out straight to being actually kind of like the Matrix. Those monsters in the Matrix.
Did you post photo on the Twitters? Okay. Squids. Yeah.
No, not yet. I've been pretty active on the Twitter because I've been painting those Blood Angels that you guys have seen. And I did another thing with tentacles using the Tentacle Maker from Green Stuff Industries, where we've seen some leaked previews from Forge World about their Mortats. And I couldn't wait that long. I wanted to put together some pretty cool Blood Angels. So I kitbashed again using.
It turned out really well.
I'm very happy with it. But this is actually on Twitter at Warmaster_TPM, where I used Vanguard veteran legs, the Forge World Blood Angel torso, and one of the cool looking helmets. Their helmets from the 30K stuff are very sleek, very, I think, impressing and intimidating looking.
I think they're really good.
I also think that the helmets have a little bit more definition, so they're easier to detail.
They do have some very clear lines to them that if you are an edge highlighting, then I think you're dead on.
And they're very distinct also from the 40K ones. So
they are. You could pick them out. It's clearly not the Mark 6, 7, and 8 helmets. They're their own thing. But I used the chest and the head from that, and then I used the hands using the two Melta pistols from the Death Company kit. And they've got X's on the the van brace, the hand greave part.
Yeah.
And that's not a 30K thing, obviously.
Well, it kind of is. So I think you're all right. Now there's actually a short story where they use the X's.
I had the tentacle from the Green Stuff Industry made a Green Stuff tentacle. Connected it from the backpack. I kind of clipped off those little, they're not dials, whatever it is. It's on the side of the backpack. There's just little detail nubs or whatever.
The vents?
Not the vents. The things that are above the vent.
Oh, right. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So I shaved those off and then connected the pipes to that and then let them out to the hand and then let the green stuff cure. And I kind of set it up to where there were things that held it in place that, like, I wanted to give some kind of action pose. I know it's very difficult to describe this on air, but it is on Twitter. You can see it. And anyway, got a pretty dynamic kit bash. Was really happy how the paint turned out and his pose turned out.
Well, I've got some big hobby news myself, Paul.
The next thing I want to go for the finishing moves on this segment is how to drill out barrels.
Well, we can come back to finishing moves. Chris Morgan told us he has some stuff. Give us the deets, Morgan.
That's yes. Now Seriously. We're getting to that, but I'm saying I'm leading into. I did not drill out the barrels, so I'm hoping
you said that at the
guys.
Beginning of the show, Paul. But like Chris is going to drop some like major knowledge on us. He's going to illuminate.
My sails are windless at the moment. Woof. The thunder is stolen.
Take it out. Let's hear what you got.
All right. This is a big moment, guys. I've talked about this for a while, but in my hands right now, I have a box, and in the box is my first airbrush.
Wow.
All right, so, you know what, Chris?
Wow, guys.
before you even open that box, you need to give me a call. I didn't know this. This is news to me, and we talk all the time. So this is a big spring on everybody. Chris, we need to have several conversations.
Dude, are you the most excited?
Yeah, I am. I have actually been like a compressor connoisseur lately. I'm looking for the perfect compressor. I've been shopping around for deals. I walked into Harbor Freight. I've been on Amazon.
Harbor Freight. Find that there'll be a coupon that comes out every week or whatever for Harbor Freight too. Go in there and get you a $60-$70 compressor. If you feel like it, get the 2-year warranty. If you don't, who cares?
It depends. And you know, if you're just looking for something to base and do like a quick Zenithal highlight, Paul is absolutely correct. But if you're looking something to do some like extreme detail highlights, you might want to look elsewhere.
I'm gonna work up to that, Adam.
Have you ever primed an army's worth of Imperial Guard armor in a single day?
Exactly.
Well, I can tell you, Andrew, that I did 2,500 points of Blood Angels by hand in about 6 weeks.
That is cramp worthy, and good luck with your treatment for carpal tunnel.
Well, now the airbrush is going to help.
Yes, it will. I'm actually kind of scared because I'm like, is my brush blending not going to be good enough? I'll figure it out. But either way, guys, I'm super excited.
I know that, you know, Chris, I'm proud of you because I think at one point in time you said that's something that you're never going to do. I'm a brush painter for life. Like with the number 4, you didn't actually say 4. You put up the number 4 with your fingers. But
chat, I put up the number 4 with my fingers.
We're talking about gun barrels, and I think that we should absolutely have an episode where we dispel airbrushes. Like, there's multi-purposes for them and many uses for them, and you know, you can get a lot of different effects. It's not just the airbrush look. And one of my biggest compliments that I get, and some of the stuff that I do, you know, obviously it's airbrushed, but they say, oh, you do a really fantastic job of making something look not airbrushed. And I take that as a giant.
When stuff is over airbrushed, it just I don't like the look of that. Look, I know we're playing with toys. It's no big deal. People can do whatever they want. I'm certainly not going to tell someone if they're happy with it to not do it that way. But I think that kind of obviously airbrush look is not something I like.
Yeah, some people like to watch Charlie Brown. Some people like to watch anime version of Charlie Brown.
Chris, it's a big step. Anybody who's out there getting new to airbrushing, Harbor Freight can get you in there. I've had the same compressor, the same $70 compressor for 5 years.
Yeah, they were out of the kind I think that you were talking about when I went in there last. I have to hop in there again. But yeah, I'm super excited. And I was telling Andrew a little while ago, I've got a bunch of drop pods that are just screaming, airbrush me.
Yeah, dude. The now internet famous Dreadnought list. I airbrushed my 6 Lucius drop pods literally 2 days before ATC. The interiors weren't done. And the outsides had only been, you know, I airbrushed the outsides red, but the insides weren't done. They're still base coat black. So I airbrushed 2 colors inside 6 of those Lucius drop pods in a single
afternoon. Champion.
It was just, I was like, and machined it out, and it was super easy. You know, you toggle 2 things, and I actually have 2 different airbrushes, and I think it's compressors. I think you have to be an incredibly elite. We're talking top 2% of airbrush painters to really notice a difference in compressor types.
Well, if you've got adjustable air pressure, PSI.
Yeah, but even still, it requires a skill and experience level that in order to take advantage of PSI pressure, because you not only have to be a master of the brush itself and tapering, you know, your fine motor skills to control both the release of air and the release of paint has to be at a super duper high level before you can start noticing the difference between, you know, 150 PSI and 190 PSI. It's kind of like one of those things where you have to be a...
Those are giant numbers you just gave, by the way. That's auto paint PSI.
I apologize, team.
Between 20 and 50 PSI is what you actually...
Yeah. Andrew likes to paint like it's a hot rod.
Absolutely. 1-800-MAKO USA. That's what I do to paint cars.
I think
you exactly illustrated my point, though, is that I have no idea what PSI
it's just on or off.
I just turn it on and off, and that's just how it goes. And I'm a pretty good painter.
Like, yeah, no, I do the same thing. My PSI stays set at pretty much what I consider my functional level.
Right. And so, I kind of compare it to, like, you know, the difference. If can you blindfolded tell me the difference between a 18-year-old scotch and a 20-year-old scotch? Well, probably not. And I think that 99% of scotch drinkers in the world can't tell you the difference, just blindfolded.
99% of our listeners couldn't tell you because they're not 89.
But that's what I'm saying. We have sophisticated listeners.
I think the same thing is true with painters and the air pressure thing.
Yeah.
99% of the guys aren't going to be able to tell the difference between 25 PSI and 30 PSI or whatever that Adam and the other super elite painters of the world paint.
Well, I mean, my point is, when you're just starting out, don't – and if you're unsure if this is going to be something you like and will continue with and get the most out of your investment, don't buy the expensive one. Get the one that is the 60, 70 bucks. 100%.
So, Paul, you're right on the point.
Compressors don't matter to 99% of painters. Brushes –
they should matter.
Actual – no, they shouldn't. I totally disagree.
No, you're absolutely wrong.
Brushes – matter a ton.
I'm gonna have to. A compressor matters a great deal because there's many different compressors. Compressors come in different size and compression. And does it have a tank? Does it not have a tank? Is it sealed? Is it not sealed? Do you need a? do you need?
We're gonna move on from the compressor discussion.
So yeah, like depending on where you live, like compressors are a huge.
I blacked out, guys. I blacked out.
I know.
Adam, still
forget
talking
it.
About compressors. I blacked out.
Here's the deal. If you need to know this,
the PSI in his brain is too much right now. We need to move on.
No. If you need to know that much about compressors, you already need to know that you don't want the $70 one.
But if you're just – listen, if you just want something to like quick prime everything, everything Paul and Andrew just said was perfect because they are geniuses.
A base coat and then in the first couple of layers of detail of highlight.
That's about what I'm looking for right now. It's still worth
investing something with a tank because then you're spraying for several minutes and you want some extra volume in there so it doesn't overheat and start spitting and spewing.
Well, I will say it's interesting too. Just, you know, what do you want to do with your airbrush? Base coat and like a pretty basic highlighting. I still don't really highlight with my airbrush.
No,
I'm a two or three layer extreme highlight on edge highlights, and I think that highlighting with your airbrush kind of not undercuts, but that's a whole additional layer of airbrushing skill that I just haven't acquired yet, and really don't like the aesthetic on my models. I think I don't know how to paint that way, so I don't. But it is interesting to see the guys who practice with it. And Morgan, I look forward to see what you publish. I think you're going to be very frustrated because you're going to repaint your whole army. But
man, that's probably the biggest anxiety attack,
especially with red.
Oh, huge! I mean, I legitimately
red's very difficult because it always sprays very transparent. That should maybe be our next show.
100% repainted my entire Blood Angels army. Yeah. When I rebased them, when I went from 25s to 32s, I said, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it right. Stripped them all and I repainted them. And Paul has seen my guys in person. It's a really vibrant red on a black base coat. So it looks dark, but still has some good highlight to it. But I'm so glad that I repainted them because I also brush coated in my first batch of dudes. And at the end of the day, a base coat of airbrush is just better. It's just a superior look.
On that note, we'll move on to talk about some more, side of things.
I'm not done talking about – I want to talk airbrushes all day because this is what I do.
Paul, move on.
He's done.
I'm kidding. This is all jokes, guys.
With that, Justin Troop just logged in and has some opinions about airbrush compressors.
Justin's going to come in and just like beat us all over the head via the internet.
Well, I mean, there is a lot to say about this stuff. I mean, I don't want to trivialize it. There really is. If you're making this – but it's like kind of like where you want to be with it. And where I was and where I still am was I've got a great airbrush that can move Games Workshop paint, and I've got a compressor that is suitable for my needs. That's all that matters. But now we're moving on.
Just an extra tool in your hobby arsenal. Is that a good way of saying it? In your hobby quiver? That's probably a better way of saying it.
So arsenal was right.
Yeah, or Arsenal. Well, given we're playing 40K, you don't need to have an airbrush to achieve fantastically painted armies. So I just want to make that clear.
You don't, but it helps. I definitely agree with that.
Yeah.
All right, Paul, what are we talking about next, man? You're Captain My Captain.
On Monday of this week, Warhammer World ran a 40K event using their Combat Patrol Detachment rules.
Please explain to us all, what's the difference between Combat Patrol and Kill Teams?
Combat Patrol is, it's like a small game, whereas Kill Team is a bunch of individuals running around. This is still Combat Patrol's on the unit-based combat side of things.
It's probably closer in relation to something like Zone Mortalis, except not in the confined space with the confined space rules, but generally around that sort of size, like 750 points or less.
Now, Kill Team, it's got its own appeal to it, where every model on the table is its own dude, and he's out there, you know, maybe seemingly with his own agenda, or whatever, whatever. Combat Patrol still is more like a small game. Like, when I teach people how to play 40K, we play a 1,000-point game. When Combat Patrol is 400 points, and the only compulsory choice is a troop squad, and then you've got one of each of the other four sword slots outside of Lord of War, of the traditional four sword slots as an optional. So one more troop optional, one more HQ, elite, heavy support, and fast attack optional. But it's got some of the similar rules, and these are all posted up on the Warhammer World Facebook page, the Games Workshop Warhammer World official Facebook page. So all units chosen have to be from the same faction. No miniature may have an armor save better than a 3+, and no better invulnerable save than a 5+. No model can have more than 3 wounds, and then vehicle's total armor value has to be less than 33. The front plus side plus so rear.
Does that mean you can bring a Riptide, but it's going to have a 3+, or does that mean that you
can't take it? No miniature may have an armor save better.
Okay, just making sure.
Yeah. So whenever you see that for this, that's what it means. So interesting, you know, until we get I'll pick up the Kill Team rules as soon as possible because, you know, we're going to have this level of event at Warzone, the Friday Night of Warzone themed in the Horus Heresy, Battle of Isfahan 3. That's, you know, so all the missions are going to have that kind of theme. You can bring whatever you want from 30K, but, you know, looking at these Combat Patrol rules, that might be more in line with kind of the intent behind the event. We were thinking at the first 300 points, instead of the traditional Kill Team 200 points to compensate for the extra cost of some of the Forge World stuff. I'm sorry, of the Horus Heresy stuff. But I thought it was really cool, and apparently it was successful. They had like 60-something players come in on a holiday, on a Monday.
I don't want to take away from the event by saying it's only because it's at Warhammer World that people attended. But certainly the combination there.
As a standalone event, I'm not Combat Patrol and smaller point games. I think they have trouble drawing, you know, a large attendance, but still this is a neat thing to do, to put out to publish these rules essentially for free. And I believe that they were in one of like the fourth edition rule book, also Combat Patrol, or it might have been its own thing, and then might be in a White Dwarf or something, and then made its way in to one of those one of the main rule books. I can't remember exactly how that progressed.
I'm not 100% sure on that either.
I'm all about Games Workshop publishing rules for free to that, and at smaller, you know, point limits that allows more people to enter the game easier, like easy entry. I mean, cost of entry is something that we've talked about on the show at great length in episodes past, but, you know, cost of entry for a game like Warhammer 40K, where we're traditionally playing 1500 at the minimum, 1850, 2000 points, you're talking hundreds of dollars. If you could just spend maybe 75 to 100 bucks, like maybe you'll assemble a few models and give it a try. And I think to their effort and to their credit, I should say, it's a great effort to welcome more hobbyists to this fantastic
Adepticon traditionally runs some Combat Patrol events. Anyway, it's just kind of neat. Just the smaller skirmish level stuff, I like it because there's a lot of elements there that you can kind of embrace. You can model up some specific squads and attach a little bit of narrative to them. You know, you can play with some stuff that maybe you haven't finished your whole army for yet. You just have a few models ready to go. You can get them on the tables a little bit sooner. It's kind of neat. Anyway, looking at this Combat Patrol rules is possibly a sub event.
I will say, you know, it's funny when I first read the Kill Team rules and Combat Patrol, I think there was, you know, I was probably exposed to it really for the first time 3-4 years ago, but I was really turned off on it at first, because it was always put on, at least in, I hate to say tournament settings, but, you know, in event type settings, as an alternative to there was this stigmated or, you know, this negative connotation with big point tournaments. I remember in fifth edition back in the Ardboys days, you know, you'd have 30, in Ardboys in Augusta when I was in high school, or rather an undergraduate, you know, there's 45 players from all over the region to come play in the Ardboys tournament in Augusta. And it was beat stick and brutal and 2,000 points and whatever all else. And then, a few weeks later, they'd throw on the Combat Patrol tournament as an alternative to competitive 40K, as if there was something negative and unlikable and unpleasant and despondent about the bigger point games. And so I was always turned off to it, thinking to myself, well, this is for the guys who don't want to play competitive 40K. This is for the non-tournament players. And I always had that stigma in my mind until very recently when I realized that it's an outlet that can be competitive but has its own kind of narrative fluff settings to it. It has its own appeal separate, I think, from the main basic rulebook Warhammer 40K game that we all love. So that turnoff has gone away from me, but it was something that I certainly had to get over.
I just like moving models around. And I find that, I mean, I like playing with different people too. And there are sometimes a different set of folks that play, like play some of these games as opposed to some of the other stuff that we also
there absolutely there absolutely is.
Yeah.
There's something to be said about being the player that can be adaptable to those different formats. I know I've struggled with it in the past where I look at a format and I think, if I'm going to drive, you know, an hour and pay $15 for this, there's only a certain way I want to play at that type of a commitment, right? On the other hand, you're trying to think, what can I do to be more open to the idea that there are other formats that are worth playing? And I think that the more players that shift towards that sort of adaptable attitude, the more enjoyment people are going to be finding in the game.
Look, and if you lose a 400 point game and it only took you 30 minutes, you just play again.
Yeah.
Yeah, who cares? Anyway, it's really neat for them to encourage these type of events and publish these rules. And then we got Kill Team going out and just any different ways to enjoy our models. I mean, I am looking forward to building a few squads here and there for the things that appeal to me. I'm going to be building up Death Watch units. I don't think I'll build a whole Death Watch army. You know, again, I'm still on the kind of the Allied Force type thing. But 400 points of Death Watch will fit into a combat patrol pretty well and give me models, obviously, to use in a kill team type environment.
Well, Death Watch is, I mean, we discussed this last week and perhaps the week before, but Death Watch is the one codex that you can really kind of run a combat patrol slash kill team style of list at the 1850 or 2000 point level or 15 to 2000 point.
Yeah, and I'm just saying I'm going to build those models because they look cool. I mean, that's kind of what started me on my Blood Angel project was I just wanted to build some really cool looking Marines.
Yeah, and you know, if you're going to paint really cool looking Marines, they've got to be Blood Angels.
And in the past, I built some,
they be Raven Guard or Ultramarines?
Because they're less cool than Blood Angels. Oh, come on, come on, Adam, keep up.
I thought that was obvious.
Yeah,
are you on the right show?
Do you know the other three guys on this podcast?
The other 95% of our listeners, and they're all cheering right now.
If they're still listening to this show, they're probably agreeing with us.
Listen, like, I love Blood Angels. I love the fluff behind it. I love it. But guys, just play off.
Well, where I was going with this, when I had a cool paint scheme in mind, and I wanted to paint some allies for my chaos. I already had a guard army, but I wanted to paint a cool-looking different guard. I call this my Barbarous Auxiliary, is what I called them, the leftover from the Horus Heresy era. I wanted to paint up a small force of white and green Death Guard IG Auxiliary to use for my chaos as allies. You know, so occasionally I'll just do that. I was like, I want to paint up a teaser, a small force of this other thing. And if formats exist out there for me to play with them, so much the better.
I can get behind that.
Okay, so let's get a little bit into the rumor type stuff. And we might even get a little wish listy. So let me just preface this: some things we're going to talk about here is a little bit of a wish list slash rumor slash whatever. So
certainly going to go off the wish list deep end.
Well,
so long as all of the listeners out there understand that Adam is wish listing and we are encountering these rumors,
I'm probably going to wish list a little bit also because and it's chaos. And I know I talked about
chaos. Let's temper our expectations and understand that we should wait to make our purchase decisions and wait to make our let's not get our hopes and dreams crushed based on what the the wish listing is.
Why be a part of this game if you can't wish list for your own army?
Well,
or,
fun,
or an army
fun,
that you don't have never played.
It's fun to dream. It's fun to dream in theory craft. But we know we're going to get this this book coming out for The Traitor's Hate, which is a Chaos Space Marine supplement. And by all looks of it, it's going to be kind of similar to the Angels of Death book that we got. And what I say by looks of it is we know we're getting a book. It's got at least Karn in it.
Which is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we're getting updated rules for him. We're certainly getting an updated model, and that was on the Games Workshop Facebook page. Dropped in a masterful way.
It was beautiful. Yeah. We don't have to leak that. They've come leaps and bounds in their social media prowess and understanding, and they're doing a great job.
But we've heard rumor of there being some additional space or Chaos Space Marine psychic disciplines. And that's what makes me think that we might get something similar to an Angels of Death release, because the Angels of Death book also came out with some new Space Marine psychic powers.
So, I got to say, just real fast, the title for this book has it just leaves you wanting more, because you keep asking yourself, what did the traitors hate?
They hate everything.
I feel like there's that title alone is a meme goldmine, but carry on.
Well, the Angels of Death had four new psychic powers. It's treason, which we know caused quite a stir when they came out.
Like, there's, big deal.
There's still some formats out there that don't let you play with some of these powers.
Well, I mean, it's hard to say it caused a stir when no one poured it into Mix in the first place.
Is the perspective of things is if we get something equally as kind of powerful for Chaos Space Marines, does that all they need to make them playable? I should say they're playable now, but Chaos Space Marines specifically, we don't see a lot of.
Let's see how this all pans out. But my biggest concern is that there are a lot of Chaos Space Marines players out there that are not playing Chaos Space Marines because they're not optimal. And we're going to get some rules and some psychic powers or some new units, possibly. We don't know what it's going to be. And from the onset looks of it, they're going to be broken, and everybody's going to throw a table. And you know what I mean?
I can assure you, it's chaos. They will not be broken.
In other news, Watcher.
Well, let me go on further, because we, you know, of course, we don't know what the power is going to be. We've seen that kind of one power thing, I think, floating around out there. But I personally believe the game is better when chaos is strong. And I just don't mean although demons are one of the kind of unique 40K properties, like factions that you don't really see in other games have copied them, kind of thing, when you see it. But
chaos, it's one of the only original things that they've developed.
Chaos Space Marines are all, I mean, they're also a unique flavor within 40K.
Yep.
And we don't see them. And I think the game is overall better when they're in the mix as a powerhouse.
But it's been a while. It's been since, what, 4th edition?
Everyone talks about, in reverence, the 3.5 edition of the Chaos Codex.
Because it was awesome.
And I remember finding that codex, and I remember them being tougher games.
I was in middle school when that happened, so I can't really comment. But
yeah, just so you guys know, Andrew's actually 14 years old.
When you can put a Nurgle Lord with demonic speed and a Man Reaper in first turn charge range on somebody.
Yeah, that's
those are all words
I don't recognize.
So again, we're talking about things.
Doom Rider.
Yeah.
Doom Rider's never been good.
Man Reaper sounds like something that I would get prosecuted for at a felony level. But I will say, in 6th edition, it was funny.
It's a scythe, Andrew. It's a scythe.
Really, okay, good. That's what I figured. In 6th edition, Chaos Space Marines were really good for all the wrong reasons. It was the Chaos Space Marine Demon Princes were all the rage, and you would take cultists as a tax to get as many demon princes as you possibly
could. I don't think
Black
Power
Days
Armor
Prince and the Helldrake, yes. Codex Helldrake was Helldrake. A joke.
Power
for
Armor
a while.
On a demon prince hot. does not count as a Chaos Space Marine.
But Codex Space Marine was the Chaos Space Marines was the rage back then, when you could land an assault in the same turn, the Black Mace was doing its thing.
Oh yeah,
Helldrakes were barbecuing all the Dark Angels bikes. It was a glorious time to be alive.
Still are if you're playing it right.
But still no Chaos Space Marines. And if I can kind of hope for anything from this book or the next Chaos book, is that we do get Chaos Space Marines as playable. What makes them playable? I don't know.
Well, so it's actually funny. I mean, I've just wrapped up. There's a league in Northeastern Georgia folks in Athens, Georgia, that they do 8-week escalation leagues. It runs from 1,100 points to 1,850 points over the course of 8 weeks. And I played Chaos Space Marines this last go around, just because it was a good painting challenge to me. I wanted to paint some stuff, and I also wanted to see if I could be competitive with CSM. And I learned some interesting things about them, but I will say I think there are builds in there, much like I believe in a lot of the lower tier, the mid tier books. There are some really, really good, powerful, competitive.
I agree. I think that those books, there is a path. There's a list, a singular list.
Let me just say this, and this might be controversial, and Paul, it's your show, so you can change the subject if you'd like. But I will say this: I think Chaos Space Marines does Gladius better than Gladius. And here's
I'm not going to change the subject or get that out.
Especially after
the next thing you need to do, Andrew, is take nude butt photos and break the internet.
No. Here's why I think that. Okay, when you take a Gladius, I get it. You get a bunch of rhinos for free.
So everybody knows, Andrew's been explaining this to me since ATC. So it's been like 2 months.
I'm on this bandwagon. I fully believe it. And here's why: if you take what do you get for free out of Gladius? You get 400 points of transports, right? OBSEC transports. But to pay for those OBSEC transports, you have to take junk that you would not normally take. That being 2 dev squads, 2 assault squads, a chaplain, and then whatever auxiliary choice of tax that you think. And then you have to build, kind of cater your list around those taxes. Do I put points in this assault squad? Blah, 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 blah.
Well, don't forget about the free rerolls from the doctrines.
Well, yeah, so the Ultramarines get the sweet doctrines, the multiple doctrines. You get, the chapter tactics are good, yada, yada, yada. But my point is, if you reallocate those quote-unquote tax points, the 200 points for the assault squads, the 200 points for the devastator squads, the auxiliary points. If you reallocate all of those into a Helldrake or 4 or 3, what you end up with is 6 tax squads with rhinos, all of which are OBSEC, and whatever your taxation is. And then in the Chaos Space Marines version, you get 6 tax squads with their OBSEC transports, and instead of those taxes, you get Helldrakes. The difference being, I've mathed it out, and when you break it down, what you're getting for free is something like, you're basically paying 120 points extra in Chaos Space Marines to not have to buy junk assault squads and junk dev squads. And you're taking what you want, but you're still getting all the OBSEC troops. And I know that seems like a weird thing to say, but if you math it out, Gladius requires a lack of flexibility from a list design standpoint. And Chaos Space Marines, because of how cheap their troops are, and because of how good Helldrakes are,
there's still one models with 3-up armor saves.
They're the exact same in almost every single way.
And they should have no fear. I mean, there are other things that make the Space Marine version better, in my opinion. But I think you have spelled out a really cool counterpoint and maybe bring some life into some things that people have Chaos Space Marines on their shelf.
The next time somebody sits down to build a Chaos Space Marine list, start your list with 2 CADs or 1 CAD, whatever, and just put 7 5-man CSM squads in rhinos, and that's how you start your list. And then build it to what you want outcome-wise, whether that's Helldrakes, whether that's, beat-stick close combat units, special
5 Mauler Fiends.
5 Mauler Fiends, whatever you want to do. And then build a Gladius. And if at the end of that construction project, you think to yourself, wow, I really wish my CSM list had more OBSEC so it could compete with Gladius, then go ahead and shoot me an email and tell me I'm an idiot. But if you get to the end of that process and realize that CSM can have just as much quality OBSEC and still better damage output options, or as good damage output options, I think you'll see my point.
Hey, man, I'm all about trying new things. Where we're going, though, is talking about the Traitor's Hate book. And if we can compare that to the Angels of Death book, the Angels of Death brought a lot more flexibility to the Marine Codex that was already packed with options.
Can you imagine a Nurgle Iron Hands 2+ Feel No Pain list?
God, That's all we talk about for the next 6 months or so. but here, that'd be in the wish list. All I'm saying is that I think that we can expect some interesting stuff to come out of it, even if it is just psychic powers. But I bet we're going to get more in line with the formation type stuff. And this Angels of Death book, it goes into how many different Space Marine chapters?
There's 85.
There's the White Scars, there's the Iron Hands, there's Salamanders.
I think six.
The Raven Guard have one in there, don't they?
They do.
I mean, Gladius is kind of already the Ultramarine one, so we won't talk about that. What are the...
It's six or seven.
Is there a Black Templar and Imperial? Yeah, there's a...
No, there's not. Dang it. Black Templar were pooed upon by GW this last go around. And by this last go around, I mean since fourth edition.
I was about to say, it's been a little while. Anyway, I'm excited just to get some more Chaos release.
I do think it's interesting, and maybe it's just me and my perception because I live in a very Imperial world, but it seems like for the last 24 months, everything that's come out has been very Khorne-centric.
That's what I hope it's not all Khorne-centric.
But, I mean, just you look at the cover photo, you look at even the nomenclature, right?
I mean, Khorne, obviously you would
Traitor's Hate. That just seems that's not very Tzeentchi.
It's all Khorne.
Or Slaanesh. Yeah,
it's no Tzeentchi.
And maybe that'll be different. And maybe once you get, my hope, my prayer is that I'm going to open it up in a week or so, and I'm going to flip over to the pages and find new codex entries for Thousand Suns and, Mark of Tzeentch, Chaos Space Marine.
People have been wanting the cult stuff for a while, the original Traitor Legions. They're very popular among the Chaos fans. Not a lot of people are behind the Warband thing.
We want chapter texts for the Chaos Space Marines. That's what we want.
Something similar there too, absolutely. And I think that it's not outside the realm of expectation. There are guys.
No, I don't think so.
And I think we're agreeing. I mean, at the end of the day, like I had a fully painted Thousand Suns army. And I loved it. It was 2,000 points of Chaos Space Marines, and Thousand Suns were so cool to me, and I absolutely adored them.
I am stoked to see them in Heresy, by the way. But go on.
No, but that's exactly the thing. Whether it's Heresy, whether it's pre-Heresy, Heresy stuff, whether it's Ahriman's, personal cadre, whatever it is, there are fanboys for each individual Chaos God and each individual cult.
Can I get even more theory crafty here for a second, and not to cut you off, but this is part of the 13th Black Crusade, second 13th
the
Black
18th,
Crusade.
The 18th, you mean?
Well, it's part
13th
two.
Black Crusade, son of the 13th Black Crusade.
Why can't they just call it the 14th?
Look.
Is there a fluff reason?
Probably. But this, on the which this is also on the Warhammer 40K.
13 is an evil number.
Facebook page is that on the cover of the book there, it's got a little note saying it's a Black Crusade. And in their blurb here, it says a campaign book that chronicles one of the opening battles of the 13th Black Crusade. So maybe we get more books happening in the Black Crusade.
It's the beginning of the end times.
And we know that Khorne is not in the Demonkin book. Maybe this is framed around the World Eaters, and get some more books later that aren't.
The Black Crusade fluff, up to this point has had Khorne be participating in several of those battles.
Yep.
So Khorne, Typhus, I think had part of his origination in that campaign, didn't he?
Plague Zombies, I believe you first saw them around that time period.
Yeah, because I remember when I'm pretty sure his model came out during the worldwide campaign.
That's a good question. I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't wait for
that. That's when I first started seeing it. At least I'm willing to be wrong. The Librarius is a little dusty in that area.
Yeah,
but so, I feel like that was the first time that he came out.
Can we get back to wish listing a little bit?
Yeah, hit me with what you want, dude.
So, and I think he wants
a Blood Angels chapter tactics is what he wants.
So
I think Furious Charge.
Chaos Space Marine Terminators are already better than their Space Marine equivalents. I would like to see them go even a little bit better.
Reason why you think that they should be better than their? I mean,
no. From a fluff point of view,
that's fair.
Absolutely not. Right off the bat, I want to see more Terminator models on the table, And we, Andrew, you and I have spoken about this, that 2 plus armor saves are no joke, especially if you can get them to be OPSEC.
This is what I would say to that. Chaos Space Marines are already better than their Imperial counterparts.
Terminators.
Chaos Terminators are better than their Imperial counterparts. But being better than dog poo does not make you good.
Exactly. Right? Like,
they're still really not great. And the reason for that is it's
Well, they're just like the Space Wolves Terminators, right? You can put combi weapons in all of them. That's about
it. You put combi weapons in all of them, and they come
with... Space Wolf Terminators are the best Terminators.
That is wrong, empirically, but...
they are the best Terminators. the best.
I think Terminator 2 was the best Terminator, for what it's worth.
I see what you did there.
But no, but I mean, Chaos Space Marines, because they don't come stock with power fists, which and they have better weapons options, which is why I say they're better than their Imperial counterparts.
Right.
What weapon options are you talking about? Like the autocannons?
They come with power weapons. And so you can equip them with any power weapon you prefer. Force axe, force sword, power maul, whatever you want. I mean, power sword, power axe, power maul, whatever you prefer. Power lance, whatever you want. And then for a 10-point upgrade, you can give them a power fist, which draws them into a point equivalent with the Imperial ones. Right. Additionally, you can take the combi weapons. So by virtue of the fact that I can take Terminators that don't necessarily have to take power fists in the whole squad, that makes them better options-wise. Second, they can be taken in squads of 3 as opposed to the Imperials that have to be taken in squads of 5. Squads of 3, I think it's one of those things where it is enough to accomplish the task that you have set for them, but it's few enough that you don't have to have the points sink, right?
Is a big fan of the small tough guy unit.
Absolutely, and I think that most players are a fan of the small weak guy unit.
As long as you like, if you have enough of them, it doesn't matter. We talked about that on the last show, but
that would be the large. Yes, Paul Murphy's. Quick sidebar. Last time, I think it was maybe 2 tournaments ago, Paul and I played each other. He showed up with the zombie artillery list, and I had the dreadnought drop pod list. And I assaulted one of his zombie squads. It was, 45 zombies, Paul?
Close to that.
I assaulted 45 zombies.
Giant Ziploc bag full of zombies.
On the top of turn 2 with one of my Contemptor dreadnoughts. And we just looked at each other. And it was kind of one of those things where, like, obviously the zombies can't hurt the dreadnought. And the dreadnought's not going to do 45 wounds in a 6-round game. And so we just kind of agreed that we probably don't have to roll it out at any point. Let's just agree that those guys are going to congeal around each other and be there until the end of the game. So it was like large squad of inefficient guys versus small squad of hyper-efficient guys, kind of a wash.
Why can't we be friends?
Exactly. They were basically just sitting back watching the rest of the game.
These dreadnoughts just need stomp.
I wish.
Oh, that would be so good. Wishlisting. I'm on board with that.
Exactly. Cast Terminators, better than their Imperial counterparts, but still not good. I think to Adam's point, if I'm wishlisting, I want to see them be good. And the way that you make them good, the way you make Chaos Terminators better than good enough to play, rather, is twofold. You either make them way cheaper or you give them 2 wounds. And I don't think either of those things are going to happen.
But we want to see them happen. We're wishlisting. I want them to have Demon Prince stats.
Well, I don't think we're going to get any stat changes outside of a character model or whatever in this book. I don't think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see a bunch of real formations, though. And the formations, they've proven that they will push the envelope on rules.
Yep.
100%. That might make the Terminators good.
Yeah, it could. It could make a unit that's traditionally not that great better with some nicer rules.
It's just so dumb to me. Like, is it False Gods? Is that the second Heresy book, Chris?
Yeah, I think it's Horus Rising, False Gods,
Galaxy in Flames.
Galaxy in Flames.
Yeah, and I think it's in False Gods where they explain, like, the value of these super suits, right? Because they don't mention dreadnoughts until way later on in the books. But these guys, they go in ahead of, they come in ahead of the wave because they got more armor. They're going to tear down walls.
Oh, no, this is in Horus Rising. You're talking about the very first. Yeah.
And, like, that's how they should perform in the books. Like, that's why I said, like, two wounds. Just make them two wounds. Keep the stats, and they're fine. They're perfect. They're competitive, and we're going to see more of them. I really want to see more Terminators on the battlefield. Maybe it's just because I just got done painting like a bajillion Terminators, Deathwing Terminators. But I do want to see more on the battlefield.
No idea what's going to be in the book, but maybe you get your wish with some cool things that is realistically probably not new stats, but hopefully some new things that give some options to playing. I know it doesn't take me much to get excited about Chaos, and I'm really happy to see this, and I am excited to see the new psychic powers. I mean, that's always things that have a big impact in the game.
Yeah, especially when you've got that Cabal that's flying around causing trouble for everybody.
We spoke, I think, in the pre-show that I think, and maybe this is the smartest thing I've ever said in any of our discussions, is that the best summoning army in the game right now is an Imperial Guard army. There's a problem there.
That's kind of a niche build. I will say, though, that I think that, yeah, obviously, to Adam's point, he's talking about the Psychana division, which is...
You can mitigate Perils of the Warp with the Commissar.
It is incredibly efficient at summoning. There's no doubt about that. That was on full display at ATC this year with some of the elite builds. But I will say, I hate to use this, the sports metaphor is apt here. There are certain teams where the league is better when this team does well. The Dallas Cowboys, the NFL is better if the Dallas Cowboys are good. The Major League Baseball is better when the New York Yankees are good. The same thing is true in Warhammer 40K. Our meta is better. Our game is better when Chaos Space Marines are good. They're supposed to be the villain. They're supposed to be this arch nemesis. When I walk into a tournament, I want to fear Chaos. And I haven't had that feeling for 2.5-3 years, really. Way longer than that. It's basic. And when I say Chaos, I mean Chaos Space Marines. Time when in the White Dwarf era for demons when there was that unbeatable White Dwarf.
Talking about demons, I'm not talking about Renegades or even the Zombie Horde. I mean, that stuff is competitive. It can win tournaments.
Right.
But you haven't fought a competitive Chaos Space Marine in half a decade.
Exactly. I've not seen a Power Armor Chaos list in my time playing Warhammer 40K.
We all know how bad of a 40K player I am. The first army I ever tabled was a Chaos Demons army. Or Chaos Space Marines army.
Exactly.
I will tell you, the last one I played, he sold his army. So...
And so with all... I mean, you just heard a resounding, you know, four anecdotes later. The world is better when Chaos Space Marines is good. And to Paul's point, if we get new units... If we get new formations and if we get good psychic powers, man, what a cool meta that will be to walk into, especially because by the time it really hits your local meta listeners, it's going to be 2017.
I have to say, you keep saying we, like, look, you're talking heresy. I'm not a Chaos Space Marines player, and anybody that is a heretic, and I want to kill Bay Merms.
Said the Xenos filth. Get out of here.
Yeah, come on.
I play Space Marines, but that said, I agree with you 100%.
it's just like Yerrick and Ghazghoul. Ghazghoul spares Yerrick because without him, who's worth fighting, right? Just Chaos Space Marines need to be that for... everyone else.
Hey, Chris, people just want interview. To fight. We have Chris and I have an interview coming out this week, or early next with David Annandale.
Each other.
He took the bait.
I know. We actually go into some of that. David Annandale, we're going to wrap up our Chaos Space Marines, and I really thank everyone for indulging us and our wish listing and theory crafting or whatever. I mean, again, take none of that as valid other than our hopes that the meta evolves with what are traditionally a cool villain in the story. Chris and I did a really cool interview with David Annandale, and he went into a lot of his background. So this is coming out. This is coming out very soon. It may have come out around the same time as this podcast, but it was absolutely great to talk to and just had an awesome insight into the theory of writing and hearing about his background to what got him writing 40K stories in the first place was pretty entertaining. I mean, you can confirm or deny this, Chris.
Well, I can tell you that as a fan of literature, listening to him talk, he's a college professor and teaches literature, and it is fascinating to sit there and talk with him. There are about 100 different questions that I wanted to ask him that I couldn't, just on the topics of horror. He's obviously if anyone follows him on Twitter, you'll see very quickly he's a big H.P. Lovecraft fan, and he's a big old school sci-fi fan. He's very, very steeped in all of this, and it shows as you talk to him. I think anybody who is a fan of sci-fi, a fan of the horror and the suspense sort of genres, is going to get a real kick out of that interview.
Let's move into our finishing move segment here, because we kind of talked about at the beginning of the show. I know it got a little bit cluttered. I got a comment when I posted my Cold Blood Angel guy with a dual melta pistol. He's like, aren't you going to drill out your barrels? Well, I am absolute pants at drilling out barrels. I always, always, always blow the barrel out. So I asked, hey, how do you guys out there do barrel holes and not blow them out?
I'll just jump right in here. I've done the hand drill, and the hand drill is great, and it's fine. But when you're doing 30 tactical Marines, sometimes that's not enough. And you may risk blowing out a barrel, but you'll get really good at using a drill on a low power setting. So just,
well, if you're talking about power tools, I let me go with,
oh yeah,
well, let me go with the tips that I got first, because going up using a power tool on your miniature, that's not where you want to start. If you were intimidated about doing this,
throw them to the wolves.
What a freaking veteran. I almost just dropped a hard F-bomb laughing at you, Adam. Get out of here. Nobody starts the power drill on their toys. Don't make Paul break out the bleep on me. Okay. You're tempting me hard, Adam.
When I first started drilling out barrels, it was for my 30K Marines. And I was lucky enough that GW has their sort of tiny hand drill that was part of their last line of miniature hobby tools. I just started cracking at it at my bits box. I would just pick a bolter out or a bolt pistol, and I would start just practicing at it. What point of the drill bit needs to be in the center of the barrel hole? And there were several that I screwed up, but I managed to get it good enough that I felt comfortable putting it on the miniatures that I was going to put on the table.
Practice makes perfect is good. And I'll keep this kind of short and sweet. The tips that I got solicited. I was like, smart Twitter people telling me I should do this. How on earth do I do it? And some of their responses were, one guy said he used a hot needle to put his pilot hole.
That's very smart.
To be.
That's very
smart. That's an excellent idea.
Yep.
Why didn't I think of that?
And
that,
Before I throw drill into a tiny, tiny barrel hole, I do the same thing. And it's very, very smart and practical. So
obviously a pilot hole is like step one to not blowing out your barrels. And then it gets into, it's like, well, what do you do? And the guys said, yeah, I use a hot needle. Of course, so I said a smaller drill. Yeah, I mean, duh. But still, I mean, some of these things are pretty tiny. But I think the hot needle is probably the best tip I got for how to start the process.
So we talked about, I think in the first segment of finishing moves, we talked about how to weather a model.
Yeah. These are just tips to people. If you're a novice at doing this particular thing, you may be an awesome in other areas, but you don't know how to do this. This is kind of what this segment is best for, I think.
I weather all of my barrel, whether it's an airbrush or if I'm using pigments. So if I really mess up, you can hide it a bit. Some typhus corrosion, some black airbrush, or some black soot. You can hide it.
This melta gun has melted off the whole half side of this barrel.
Exactly. I mean, it's got to look good from about arm's reach away. If we're talking about painting stuff that looks really good on the table, and I've won best painted competitions with a couple blown out barrels. Like, you can do it, y'all. Like, it's possible.
Well, practice is where you need to be. And I think that the tip that I got was a pilot hole, and then what to use for the pilot hole. And I thought the needle was great. And you're talking about using a power tool. Dremels, if you get good with a Dremel, I think, is probably where you want to be, because you can have a little bit more fine control over it.
The problem with the Dremel is how you actually handle the tool, because a Dremel tool is usually like a handheld device, as opposed to having it doesn't have a grip like a power tool will. But if you can find a Black & Decker, has a battery pack, rechargeable, but it's got about like 20 different settings on it. You set it at the lowest one, you have a lesser risk of blowing it out.
Well, so I think the other thing that should be mentioned here real quick is, at least in my experience and of my friends, who I can say this with absolute certainty, a lot of gamers and a lot of hobbyists wait until they're done painting the model, drill out the barrels. And that's wrong. That's so wrong on every level. If and when I drill out barrels, it's before I even glue a miniature together. I have a bits box I'll sit down on an afternoon on Saturday. I'm watching Archer, and I will pull out of the bits box the arms with the Infernus pistols or the melted guns or whatever it is, the bolters, and I'll just drill out bits or drill out barrels.
Just ready to go
before I glue them on. And the reason why that's vastly preferable to the alternative is because if you do blow out a barrel, you're not going to glue that to a miniature unless one of two things happens. One,
giving way too much credit here.
It's repairable. Or two, you have absolutely no other alternative and you just can't replace that bit. My recommendation to every listener is to drill your barrels before you glue them to your miniatures. That's a big, big start. And then two, I'm a huge, huge fan of the hand drill because it is very rare. I mean, anyone who's really operated with a hand drill, you know, you can see that the barrel's about to blow out. It's not like it's like, surprise. Like, it just popped out because you were over there cranking. No, no,
no. Every time it seems like a surprise to me.
That blows my mind. For like, Paul, I can't even explain it. You're an adult. You're an adult who has a good job. Like, I can't believe you're that dumb. I don't understand how that works. Like,
I'm more at risk.
Look,
I'm off when I'm setting it to start and then end up pushing it and stabbing myself in the thumb with it.
So that is far more likely an outcome than blowing out the side of the barrel.
100. Right. Drill out the barrels before you mount the miniature, because I've done this before and I've learned from my mistakes and I'm going to pass them along to you. You're holding a miniature in your hand and you've got your thumb on the barrel. If you're right-handed, you've got your left thumb on the barrel and you've got your miniature wrapped around your hand. You throw that drill, whether it's power drill or any kind of drill, it doesn't matter. And you start torquing. And especially if it's a hand drill, but sometimes if it's electric or whatever kind of drill, what you'll end up doing is torquing the model in the opposite direction of the drill. And you don't want to do that because you will rip off the arms. You will bend the arms. You know, plastic and the plastic glue that you're using is strong. But when you start applying those counter forces to it, they're exacerbated, like they're made even stronger, and you will start tearing apart your model. Especially do not do that when they're painted. So, Andrew, very good tip.
I will sum up my last little tip with this. Drill before you glue. Use a hand drill. Until you get to the point where you're winning best painted at GTs, use a hand drill. Don't listen to Adam, because it's basically like, it's like listening to me on litigation techniques. Like, you didn't go to law school. You have no idea. So just don't.
What you want to do is you want to bend this resin with a blowtorch.
Exactly. What you want to do is argue section 637 on a hearsay exception. No, you don't know. Just chill. Okay.
Thanks for rambling.
Regular people use a hand drill. Don't use Black and Decker. And then my last little tip is, if you're drilling out barrels, it does not have to go the length of the barrel. I see this all the time, and yeah. I've had this conversation with people. They're like, I literally sat with probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. I was in Athens on a hobby day at the local game store where everyone showed up, and I did a painting tutorial and basically taught everyone that if you have washes, it's paint skill in a jar. And we were talking about drilling out barrels, and old buddy had a hand drill and a long drill bit, and he was probably a quarter inch to a half inch into his bolt gun.
No.
And still drilling. And I was like, what are you? No, you need to be maybe an eighth of an inch into the tip of that barrel before you stop.
Well, no, some people like to drill out the cross part too. So it's complete, open cylinder in there where you've got the vent and the barrel hole.
And if you're doing that though, that's a very different animal.
Oh, I'm not doing that.
I'm not a sadist, but for the people who are doing that, like, that's a very different animal than what we're talking about, where you're just trying to drill out that end piece for that cool, again, a basic level aesthetic.
If the drill that comes out of the elbow is like, what happened?
Exactly.
It just has to be the tip. Like, you have to give the illusion that there is a barrel there. That's it. So you're talking about seven, maybe eight turns of a hand drill and a very light pressure with an electric drill.
So it goes, just starting out, pilot hole, whether that be a small drill bit, a needle, and then you don't have to go do the whole length of the barrel.
And for those of y'all that don't want to heat up a any kind of piece of metal or glue, anything like that. Do it before you glue it. That's fantastic. Way to go. Rhyme it. But if you have a thumbtack in the house, that is a great way to create a pilot hole for a hand drill or an electric drill, any kind of drill. But I think by far the two biggest takeaways from today in this discussion right now are: do not glue it to the model. Do it beforehand. And if you can create a pilot hole, do it. And you can do a hot, you know, take a hot piece of, my wife is a dentist, so I'm very fortunate to have a bunch of sharp needles that she doesn't use anymore. They've been autoclaved and cleaned, and I can do whatever I want. But a thumbtack almost works better than those. It's the perfect tool to just create that little pilot hole. And if you want to heat it up, go for it. Just don't melt the plastic or else you're going to burn yourself.
It's very difficult to... Yes, I totally agree. And I push pin, I think, is better than the thumbtack. I think that's what Adam's talking about. But
yes, I'm talking about a push.
You have that grip.
Something with a handle,
that grip. If you heat it up, I'm always trepidatious about that because I can't control melt.
I'm the melt master.
Wow.
I appreciate your use of the word trepidatious.
That's yes.
He could have said braggadocious.
If you know anything,
you
can about
say
me.
Words like that because Justin's not here, and yes. We love him and miss him.
Yes. Well, regardless of my trepidation or nervousness, it's a matter of like whether you use a tool to start the pilot hole or not. It does not have to go very far into the barrel,
right?
Unless you're a crazy person, like a la what Paul was talking about earlier. and if you do it before you glue your models. Very low risk. Very, very low risk.
Protect your thumbs, folks.
I also recommend using the smallest possible drill bit. Very, very often what I've seen, and I fell to this temptation when I first started hobbying at a very high level also, is that I would see, okay, so I've got, I'm just using made up numbers. I've got a 1/8 inch barrel or, you know, a 1/16 inch
Nothing helps an abstract example more than made up numbers.
Yeah, thanks for trying.
Thank you
for that. It seem like you've ever seen a drill bit. That's great.
Way to crush my hopes and dreams. So whatever the size barrel you have, and then you would use one size down from that as your drill bit, and you would try to hollow out as much of the barrel as possible. Do not fall prey to this temptation. Use a very, very small drill bit to hollow out as little amount of the barrel as possible. And then when you're done with that, if you're unhappy and you think that drill out should be larger, you can add in a larger diameter drill bit.
This is all great, guys. Man, I really appreciate you sharing your thoughts on this. I think these have been helpful to me, I know, because learn a little bit as we go. And if anybody wants to hear any specific little quick tips we can cover like this, please let us know and we'll make sure to get all the relevant info we can and share our experiences with them. Anybody else got anything they want to add before we get out of here?
After this drill bit tutorial, let's all make an effort, including all you out on the internet, to be less judgy of those who have gone without.
No,
we love you anyways.
That was going to be my final point, is that like, look, if you don't want to drill your drill bits, but your stuff's fully painted, I'm going to forgive you 100%. But if you're going for best painted at a tournament and I'm on the judging panel, that might be a part of it. I know it's not all about painted. Hobby doesn't necessarily equal best painted, but that could be a tiebreaker.
Absolutely, it is.
All right, good night, guys.
Adios, team.